Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to another episode of Everyone is Hot, the podcast that talks about your favorite stealth sex symbols and the film or TV show that turned you on to them. I'm Michael Stevens.
And I'm Shelley Brooks, and we are doing something slightly different from our normal format today. We've got another mini-sode for you guys. This one was suggested by Michael, and Michael, this was such an interesting choice. Listeners, this is not I think the fun thing about our minisodes is that they are very rarely pinned to anything that is like contemporary to be like for SEO. Like, we truly are just doing these about movies that like we have watched recently and we're like, we got to talk about this one, right?
Yeah. I'm completely unmoored. This is probably the first time in a while you're hearing me again. So I've been doing.
And we're so happy to have you back.
Yes, I'm happy to be back. And in my endless stream of activity, this is one movie that I revisited. The Straight Story.
No, we hadn't named it yet.
Okay, cool. Sorry, caffeine has not kicked in. Yes, dear listener, today we are talking about David Lynch's film, The Straight Story. It came out in 1999. If you have not seen it, I guess I could do a quick synopsis, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, I wrote something down on my letterbox that pretty much summarizes it. It is a fairy tale. No, it's not a fairy tale. Let me not.
I was going to say, it is based on a true story.
It is based on a true story, but it's directed by David Lynch, so, you know, he's got to do his thing to it. And I guess it's more of a story about a straight story about an ailing 73-year-old World War II veteran who drives a John Deere 300 miles to see his estranged brother, who's also ailing. That is an oversimplification of what the whole movie is about.
That hits the main points. And it is interesting, I mean, that you use the words fairy tale, because I just watched this for the first time before we logged on. I am a David Lynch fan. I've seen most of his films, I would say. I haven't really seen the shorts. But I had not seen this one, in part because I had heard kind of language like that around it. And, you know, Lynch can sometimes veer into a little bit of like sentimentality. So I felt like before I watched this, I'd always heard of it as like his most straightforward film, his most touching film, blah, blah, blah. So I'd kind of like not put it off necessarily, but it'd never been at the top of my list because I was like, I think I know what this is going to be. I feel like
who gives a shit?
I did not. I did not have the right idea about what this was going to be. And I will tell you, I'm pissed off that it is a Saturday morning. And right before we got on to talking to microphones, I was like bawling in my bedroom.
I was wondering why your hands were shaking this time. I was like, I'm going to ask Shelly what's going on, but I feel like she'll tell me at some point.
Yeah, I've got like a little bit of puffy eyes. I quickly put on makeup right before we got on because listeners, we do like have video for us that you do not see, but that yeah. we can see each other. And I was like, I'm going to look like bloodshot, like puffy eyes. And I mostly resisted the tears until the very end. And like, as the listeners know, we don't really care about spoilers on this podcast because every movie we talk about is like at least 20 years old. But if you don't want a spoiler for The Straight Story, turn this off right now. What really got me is, I mean, there are so many touching scenes like throughout this, especially there's like a scene in a bar where, you know, two old men like talk about their experiences
in World War II
and the memories they have that's so, oh my God, wrenching. But what finally broke me was the brother that he's going to visit.
Yeah.
We don't see until the last like 5 minutes of this film. And he comes to the door and it is, oh my God, it's freaking Harry Dean Stanton. And when he came to the door, because of like his associations with Lynch and my love for him as an actor, and that you have it build and build to seeing this brother and then it's fucking Harry Dean Stanton, I lost my shit.
Oh God. Okay. So I wrote a lot more on Letterboxd, but I absolutely, it makes perfect sense why you avoided this movie for such a long time, because the synopsis is, it's very simple, very straightforward, very la da da. But once you actually experience it, it's like, here's a guy who is grappling with his mortality and the awful things he's done, and his complex relationship with his brother and everyone in his life. And the movie really makes you earn that moment at the end. Like, Harry Dean Stanton is one of his best performances. I came around to this movie because I watched a documentary. I think it's like, it's called Characters, and it's got him and Peter Falk and a bunch of other guys. And they're just talking about, you know, the work. And yeah. I think there was a clip of that scene in the movie. And so I watched, I was like, all right, let me watch The Straight Story and see what that's all about. And the whole movie, I'm like, when's my boy going to show up? When is my boy? Are they going to do any flashbacks to my boy? And, right. You know, sure enough, very end, guy sees his brother. It's so simple and it's such a light touch that it absolutely, it absolutely wrecks you.
Yeah. And it's like, it's this Midwestern set film. So, I mean, there is this kind of like Midwestern reserve to a lot of the characters in it. Like, and there's a real simplicity in how they speak with each other, but you feel these like depths of feeling underlying these like very simple conversations people have. And that's, I think, the most obvious in that final scene where, so, you know, he drives up in this tractor that he's driven hundreds of miles, you know, over weeks and weeks to see his brother, because he's like, I'm not too proud, but, you know, he's this man who's in the final years of his life and who like can barely see and he can barely walk and like, he can't drive his car anymore. And so he drives this tractor all this way. And like, even when he gets offers for people to like drive him there, he's determined he wants to do it himself. And then you see his brother, who's had a stroke, come to the door with a walker, and it's Harry Dean Stanton. And then they just sit on this porch and they barely say anything to each other, but they both have their like eyes kind of like glistening. Oh. And Harry Dean Stanton like looks over at the tractor and he goes, "You drove that all the way to see me?" And he just says, "Yes,
I did, Lyle."
And that's it. Oh my God. And Harry Dean Stanton's face.
He's like shaking.
Faces.
Yeah.
Both of their faces in close up, and you just see these two reserved old men. And you, like, we've heard these details about their, I mean, he says it very simply. Richard Farnsworth is the lead character in it. And he's incredible. But he gives this very sort of like simple explanation to someone he meets along the way about his relationship with his brother. And he's like, haven't seen him for 10 years. You know, there was drinking and there were fights, and then we didn't see each other, but now he's had a stroke. And it's like, oh my God. And so you just get this very compressed version where you can imagine like this incredible, like, I don't know, rocky relationship between them. And then to just see them sit kind of quietly beside each other. Oh,
God. Oh, there's so many things about this movie that I absolutely fucking love. I love David Lynch, as everybody fucking knows. But this one really shows, like, damn, this man really has a heart. He really... the one bit of trivia that I just found out. So, you know those two brothers? There's a scene in the movie where along Alvin Strait's journey, he runs into these quarreling brothers. They're both played by Kevin Farley and John P. Farley, who are real-life brothers and the brothers of Chris Farley, who died 2 years before. Yeah. Like, there's no fucking way.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that. And they're so funny. And like, and it is funny, you do get these, as much as it's a very kind of like straightforward, sometimes naturalistic, but I mean it does have these expressionistic and sometimes like goofy touches that you expect from like a David Lynch movie. And I mean they're part of it, like they're very funny and kind of broad characters. And there's another character that Farnsworth's character meets along the way of like that felt like a very Lynchian touch, where she plays this woman who talks about how she hits a deer with her car
every single week on her way to work. I died laughing.
But it's fascinating the way that it's shot, because you don't see the crash. And, you know, whether that was like an expressionistic touch or like a budgetary touch, I don't know. But you see like a close up on Farnsworth's face and you hear like, and like then it pans to like a car with like the entire like hood of the car, like totally fucked up and like bent out of shape, and a dead deer on the road. And this woman then has this like operatic freak out where she talks about, I have to drive 45 minutes down this road to work and from work. I have a deer to every single week. I have to get to work.
I have to go. Oh God.
They're in the middle of this wide open road surrounded by wide open fields where like if there was a deer coming, you would absolutely see a deer. And it's just this great like Lynch touch that you're like, where the fuck did this deer come from? Why does she keep killing deer? And she's having this like existential like breakdown.
I got the strong sense in that moment that to be a good director, you gotta know how to wind people up and what's really fun about people and their worst moments. And goddamn, the first time I saw it, laugh really hard. Second time I saw it, laugh really hard, but I was also 10 years older. So there's a element of like, oh damn, I 100% know and live this experience every day. Mm-hmm. And life is just, you know, a rocky river that we have to grapple with. And oh man, that scene just really stuck out on my most recent viewing.
I think that there's an interesting thing that I've seen in a lot of like writing about Lynch in the last several years, that it feels like when I was younger, so much of what I would encounter in people like talking about Lynch was that like, he's so weird. It's this weird, surreal, dreamlike stuff. And then treating something like The Straight Story or The Elephant Man as like an outlier because they were more, you know, sort of more straightforward narratives, like slightly more naturalistic, but they were so, so humanistic and so emotional. And I think that now there's been a real attempt with a lot of younger writers to identify like a real through line between the more straightforward, empathetic, like humanist pictures like Straight Story and The Elephant Man and his more kind of surreal stuff. Because I think that like the way that people have in the last several years like reevaluated Fire Walk With Me, you know, or the way that they talk about Mulholland Drive. I mean, I remember Mulholland Drive being treated as more of like a sort of like puzzle box film when I was younger. And now I think it's really seen as so much more in line with these like very empathetic movies in how deeply, deeply felt it is and how emotional it is and how, yeah, humane, I guess it is, and character based. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's especially been like most obvious in the reevaluation of Fire Walk With Me. Cause I mean, I think the way that it talks about Laura Palmer as a character and as that film is like a portrait of abuse, has been much more in line with like the way that people have traditionally read Straight Story and Elephant Man.
I'm going to have to rewatch Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. But that definitely makes sense. I think, people do look at David Lynch as like, you know, this mystery man. You know, he often tells his performers, you know, add more wind, you know, to their performance. Like, there's that element where he is kind of like this, you know, mysterious sage. And then on the other hand, you know, he's pretty straightforward. I think I'm listening to his biography right now, which is, oh my God, it's so much fun. It's, I'm listening to the audiobook version of it, and I highly recommend, I don't know if there's a written version of it. And if there is, I recommend the audiobook version because you can hear him he reads it. And there's another author, the author who co-writes it with him, like jumps in at certain points, but I don't get the sense of what this would be like written down. He kind of just meanders through stories, and they're like very like brief bits, but there is one that he tells, and he, there's one story, or I guess vignette, that he tells, that he's told very often. And I think, this was like a very formative trauma in his life that's been, repeated in lots of his movies, but, you know, he encounters a woman, and she's, you know, completely undressed, and she's bruised and she's battered, and he's 8 years old, and he, you know, he's a kid when he first sees this, but he doesn't fully understand it, and it overwhelms him. It's not like a, his only response is just to immediately kind of empathize with this woman. But at the same time, he's got no idea what is happening, why it's happening. It's just this awful thing that's happening that he doesn't get. And I think that that feeling is present in a lot of his work. And I think that's the thing that really resonates to me in a lot of his movies. There's like a, I don't know, in that one scene where Alvin is dealing with this woman who's just so upset on one level, you know, we're like hearing why she's in distress, but I don't know. He's 73. He's like driving 5 miles an hour. He's trying to get somewhere. He just kind of absorbs this awful feeling. And I don't know if he fully like connects with it or engages with it. And like, you know, there's nothing he can do to help. And that level of helplessness, I don't know. I've seen it in like lots of episodes of like Twin Peaks from characters who are, I guess, trying to connect. But yeah, I'm meandering now.
But I think it really speaks to, I mean, I think it speaks to all of the artists involved in the creation of this character. So the film was co-written by Mary Sweeney, who has been like a longtime Lynch collaborator. It was co-written by John Roach, directed by Lynch, obviously, and then the Alvin character is played by, you know, sort of longtime iconic, you know, character actor and stuntman Richard Farnsworth, who was Academy Award nominated for this performance. But people might have seen him in stuff like he was in Misery. He plays the sheriff in that. He was in The Two Jakes, that Chinatown sequel that Jack Nicholson directed.
But
I think it really speaks to their collaboration on this character that you say him like taking on this woman's, you know, suffering when he encounters it. That is sort of like a defining thing in this character, is that like you so see how he carries the weight of all the accumulated experiences of his life. And I think that, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Lynch was not young when he directed this movie, and obviously Richard Farnsworth was quite old when he was in it. But I think he was in his 80s at the time. But I think that is really one of the most moving parts about it, is that you get these frequent reminders that the pain of aging is not just, you know, his repeated, you know, mentions of how he can't really see well anymore, he can't really, you know, move well anymore, that he has lost the independence of driving, that it's also just the accumulation of knowledge and also the accumulation of time itself. Like, there's a beautiful sequence where he sees a bunch of young bicyclists pass him on the road. Yeah. And then he like pulls over and joins them as they're camping. And you see these young guys like throwing a football back and forth, and they're talking to him, like asking about, you know, what's the hardest part of being old. And he says, it's remembering that when you were young. And
oh,
that,
God.
That,
and we that circle back.
So hard.
And we circle back to that feeling, that scene in where he's like in the bar with another World War II veteran, and they're just, mm-hmm. you know, drinking, and, mm-hmm. you know, the other guy, he's remembering, you know, the things he's done. And,
yeah.
God, I absolutely love that scene as a person who spends, who has a lot of men in his family who, you know, have done things and they don't talk about them at all. Like, not to, you know, release my own family. Trauma.
Like rat on your family.
Look, we all live with guilt. but yeah, I love that scene because it really shows like, oh damn. Like, getting older is, I used to, 10 years ago, I would have said something dumb, like, you know, it's a tragedy, but it's, you know, it's an inevitability that, yeah. you know, we're all going to be, hopefully, you know, God willing, you know,
yeah.
we're all going to be challenged with, and, you know, it, after
well,
that, after
funny.
Watching, yeah, after, what are yeah. you saying?
I was just going to say that with those young guys who were like talking to him, I mean, that is the, I think, a really interesting touch in that scene, is that they treat him at first in that scene the way I think a lot of young people treat old people, as almost like a different species, like that, like
yeah.
it, almost like not considering the idea that like you will ever be old. And then when he says that thing about the hardest part being that you remember being young, you see the look on one of these young guys' faces, and you're like, oh, he finally understands like that his youth is, it's not a permanent state, that this is
yeah.
moving, this is escaping from him rapidly.
God. If
I think something really interesting in that scene with the other veteran in the bar is stylistically something I really enjoy. It made me think about that Faulkner short story, A Rose for Emily, because there's like a description in it about memory where he kind of describes like the like recent memory when you're old being like a small opening, I think, and then it like opens out into a field, and the rest of your memory all just kind of like coexists in that space together, like it that it's not linear, that it's all just kind of this morass of memory.
Yeah.
And I felt like Lynch really evoked that in such a beautiful way, because they're telling these stories about being in the war, and they're talking about like their friends who died and saying like they still have young men's faces, and now I have an old man's face. And like as the story, and they even talk about like their empathy for like the people that they shot, the German soldiers, they're like, yeah, they're moon-faced boys. And all the while this is going on, there is like a soundtrack, like a kind of soft soundtrack of like the sound of like airplanes and gunfire and stuff. It's not over the top or heavy handed. It's like just very dim in the background, as though like when these guys are telling these stories, that they are taken back to those like the senses that they had at the time, that it's like they're both there and not there. I thought, oh God, that really fucked me up.
Oh God. You should check out, I don't know if you checked out the Lynch Oz documentary. Mm-mm. But the documentary gets into a lot of the spiritual, like transcendental meditation influence on a lot of his work. And he does talk about the unified field, where, you know, it's this, you know, well of thought and images, and also a place where time does not exist. And so, you know, I guess that's a little bit of that idea of, you know, everything is happening at once. And, you know, the, you know, I don't know how woo-woo you are. I'm incredibly woo-woo, and I fucking, you know, put a muzzle on myself for the sake of this podcast, because I know that people from Oxford might be listening. And I don't want to just
woo-woo. We like woo-woo.
You know what though? If I really went to, I probably should, you know, open the box. But that's another element that, like, I really love about all his work. And in that particular scene, yes, love that you said that it was not over the top. It was like just enough. Oh God. But yeah, I guess, you know, there is a little bit of that. I guess everything's happening at once, and, you know, our best moments and our worst moments are happening, and, you know, we're all kind of navigating multiple worlds at once in this little life we live.
Oh God, I'm gonna start crying.
God, I write a lot. Like this year, particularly, I've been writing down like everything that happens. Like I have one page that's, you know, here's how I feel, and then I have another page that's just this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, and it's got me feeling like time is made up, and if I want to be a better person, I have to pick right now to try. But
yeah, and I think that, you know, on just like in terms of like Lynch's like artistry, like, yeah, that is really interesting, that thinking of like, because I mean film I think is interesting to me, like as a medium, because like there are ways in which it is technically like undeniably linear, like especially thinking about like the movement of a film strip. Like, I mean, in the fundamentals of how film operates, it's moving forward in time. But I feel like the most interesting filmmakers to me are often the ones that are most able to evoke a feeling of non-linearity, or evoke a feeling of just kind of like existing in space more so than time, maybe. I don't know. Like, I was thinking about like Wojciech Haas's like Hourglass Sanatorium, which I think does a really great job of this, of it has this sort of like that time feels more like a dream than it does like a series of linear events, you know? And I think that like Lynch does, you know, less so in this movie, because this movie in some ways is incredibly linear, because he is literally moving along a road in a journey. And so like that is kind of the underlying thing of the movie. But I think that like there's enough of the touches of what he achieves in other movies of that sense of time not being linear and just being this kind of swirling things of all sorts of like feelings and events that does show up in this to an extent.
Yes, 110%, because along that road, the people that he interacts with all bring him back to like some other moment of his life or some other relationship in his life. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I love the most about this movie, as a road movie. He doesn't say, the main character, he does not say a lot. He's not incredibly articulate with his emotions, but he'll say just enough in the right moment to a person about something in his past that will tie everything together. And it renders a full picture of who this guy really is. I will probably end up rewatching this one before the end of the year. Because I need it. I need to.
I think so. I think me too. I mean, we're going to have to finish up in just a minute because we're kind of short on time this week, but I do something that I really like. I mean, sticking with this idea of like how he treats time in the movie is, I think it's really beautiful that the movie begins. I'm like tearing up again.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to mention this earlier. So yes, yes. Say it.
Yeah. I
say
feel it. Like my voice is like breaking, but like that the movie begins and it ends with like a shot of the stars and of space, which is infinite. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm like literally crying.
No, it's so good. And it reminds me of that same shot in The Elephant Man at the end where, you know, John Merrick is dying, but he's also, you know, being reconnected back to his mother and going back to that source. And, you know, this is why I fucking meditate 15 minutes a day, because, you know, I do believe that in a lot of Lynch's work, he's showing that there are moments in our lives that are more connected than we think they are. And between, you know, individuals, you know, we are more connected in our shared experience than we are separated. But, you know, so much of life is taking us away from that source or being centered. I absolutely love this movie because I think it's like, it's one of those that makes me go like, ah, this is why I love watching movies. Like, right, there's all this shit that's out there, but like the movies that get you to look at yourself and look at your life and function more as a mirror than like, I don't know, a fucking dogma or, you know, propaganda, you know, like those are the ones that I think have the power to like really, really change the world. And so, yeah, I like this one. I'm going to rewatch it. I hope you, listener, you take some time to listen to it. How are you doing, Shelly?
I'm good. I'm just like, I'm sitting here like quietly crying. So for listeners, thank you for tuning into a show called Everyone is Hot to listen to us talk about interconnectedness in the stars, man.
Space, man.
Space is infinite, dude, just like human love.
Oh, God. I have truly become my own father, and I guess I just gotta let that happen.
I know. The older I get, the more of a sentimental old so-and-so I am. Well, listeners, we hope you will stay open, stay sentimental, and most importantly, stay
horny. Please horny. Stay horny.
Oh my God, I'm crying.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.